Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We going? There you go.
All right, StreamYard.
Oh, your music was still going.
Technical difficulties here, but that's A-okay. What's going on, Leafs Nation? It's your boys, James and Clark, from Offside Hockey Talk. It's the Leafs Weekender, kicking off the week that was, the week that will be, the good, the bad, the ugly, and some other topics around the NHL. And hey, let's get right into it. The week that was for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Clark, is not exactly pretty. And the title of this episode is Simple Matters. And why do I say that? Two simple plays in two different games, one from McCabe and one from Brody, ended the Leafs game and put them behind the eight ball both times. I'm talking about the bad giveaway to Matthews, where he bobbled the puck, obviously, and we know what happened in the Chicago game. And then last night, of course, TJ Brody, same thing, bad pass, bad out. And the next thing you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs are again playing from behind. These things need to be cleaned up. It's simple little matters like that that can affect the game. It's a simple thing. And Luke Shen said it the best when he got traded here. Don't be afraid to use the glass. Put the puck up and out and just get it out of the zone. Use the glass. But these guys don't. They rim it around and it doesn't get out. It gets to the point. And what I used to say about Justin Hall, it was the 5-minute muffin. It would kill the Leafs because that was the play. Team would keep it in, would shovel it towards the net. Next thing you know, no Lucari, bing, bang, boom, and somebody's got a goal. It sucks. But that was the Leafs' two games this week in a microcosm. Simple little plays that screwed them over. Am I wrong?
No, you're bang on. And I mean, the unfortunate part, and by the way, Andy, thank you for the compliment saying I look younger, got a haircut, fresh cut. You know what? I've lost some weight lately. I'm feeling good. Feel good, play good. You're right. You know, James,
that's it right there.
That's it. So yeah, thank you, Andy. But this week was definitely a weird one. There was so much time off after the Sweden series. And I wasn't sure coming into Friday night's game exactly how they were going to come out as a team, or that were they going to be sloppy, which, you know, at times I thought they were okay, but definitely in the third period they looked just sluggish in that Friday night game, and then in the Saturday game, honestly, I thought they came out flying, and for the most part, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine and I was saying that I thought they had, you know, seven or eight really, really good scoring chances that just didn't go in. I don't know if it was necessarily a getting goal lead situation on Saturday, but it just was one of those situations where I think they might have probably won that game 8 times out of 10 had they played it over again. But it just was one of those nights where it just kind of the bounces weren't going their way. And like you said, a couple simple mistakes against a team like Pittsburgh, who maybe they aren't like skyrocketing up the standings, but until that regime of Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Carlson, like they've got some dangerous players regardless of how old they are. It doesn't matter. If you're going to make mistakes against that type of player, they're going to probably capitalize on it more often than not. So long story short on these two games is I thought Friday, I just thought they looked sluggish against a far inferior team. There were moments of times where I'm like, oh, they got this one. They're gonna be able to win this one. But then it was just a lot of just like, are they even skating out there?
Yeah.
And then Saturday, I thought again, they started well. I thought they played decently well throughout the night, but it was just those mistakes, like you said, James. So when you said that, you absolutely nailed it.
Listen, the other thing too here is in Leafs Nation, I don't care if you want to come after me like you did all weekend long when I posted the breakup Matthews and Marner. I think you need to. I think both of them need a fresh look. And I know the second line is rolling. Bertuzzi's finally getting going. You know, he's starting to click with his line mates. Here's the thing and why I do it. I think Matthews and Nylander, they have shown they can play together. It has been a thing. They have done this. And Mitch Marner and John Tavares, documented history, can play well together. And do you think Bertuzzi would be hurt if Mitch Marner was dishing him a couple sweet passes? I don't think so. I think if you shake up that top six just a little bit, give those two guys just a fresh look, a break from each other, a break from constantly trying to drive this offense when William Nylander has been on a heater, you know, and allow them to just sprinkle the offense throughout and just do different things. They tried the 11-7. I absolutely bloody hate it because you're always putting lines through a blender. That fourth line doesn't get a regular line mate. And also the fact is you're also wearing and taxing a guy out. So look at William Nylander, what, 25 plus minutes last night playing. So, I mean, you're asking a guy to do more and giving him an opportunity when he is hot. I get that. But at the same time, I'm like, well, no, I want the regular flow of lines. Throw in Alex Steeves. You called him up for a reason. Let him get in there. Let him get some touches. See what you can get out of Bobby McMahon as well. These things need to happen. But I really look at Matthews and Marner and say, break the two of them up. Let the two of them just find their own way with Tavares and with Willie. And then next thing you know, they're starting to roll. Hey, put them back together or make a super line. Put the three of them together, Willie, Matthews, and Marner, and go get some points and go point hunting like Detroit used to do back in the day. But right now, those two guys are not – they're just gripping the sticks too tight. They're trying to get things done. And everybody said, well, Matthews has got 14 goals. Hi, he had 6 goals in the first 2 games. So really – really, he doesn't have.
Yeah, and he had another hat trick too. So he had 9 goals in 3 games, and since then he has 5 goals in the whatever, however many other games they've played. So that is something to consider. Total. Yeah, that is something to consider.
So you look at it and you say, okay, those goals all came in bunches. It's not like he's spreading it throughout. I just look at it and say, break these two guys up, let them find their game, let them have some fun, put them on the power play together, obviously. But hey, why not? What's gonna hurt you? It's gonna hurt nothing. Because they can play with the guys that you're putting on their lines. They can still play with Nyes. They can play with Bertuzzi. They can play with Willie. They can play with JT. They all know how to play together, and it won't hurt either. Hi, remember when Boston whipped our ass by putting Pastrnak on the second line and giving him a fresh look against a different line? These things should happen to get guys going, and teams do it all the time. But for whatever reason, people say, oh, you know, leave them together. They'll find their way. The chemistry will click. They'll figure it out. They haven't. So why not just give them that breath of fresh air and give them an opportunity somewhere else?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I would normally agree with you, but the hard part for me with that conversation isn't even about the two of them. It's about, to me, how well the Bertuzzi, Tavares, and Nylander line has been playing together.
I know.
I almost don't want to break those guys up at all. Like, I want to keep those guys together because, to me, Bertuzzi's found his little niche on the team, and he's playing really well. He's getting to the areas that we all wanted him to get to. I've noticed him getting a little bit rougher in the last couple weeks. Like, I've seen him getting into the mix a little bit more. And James, when the Leafs signed him, we talked about him not necessarily fighting all the time, but just being that guy that's really annoying. And that's what I've noticed a lot more is I see him kind of just bumping into guys after the whistle. I see him kind of, you know, tapping guys on the legs after whistles. I see him, you know,
all maybe the extracurriculars,
getting a push in here and there. And not that he's going to get into a fight, but he makes everybody else want to fight him. And that's what I've noticed a little bit more here and there. And to me, that's the Tyler Bertuzzi we all know and hated from the days in Detroit and the days in Boston. And so, like, I think he's starting to finally kind of get comfortable in his new role and on the new team. He's starting to feel comfortable with that new line. And I the way that those three have been playing for how long, good, maybe 10 games now, I think they've been playing pretty good together.
They're really well.
I have a hard time breaking those guys up. Now, if you want to discuss Mitch Marner, you're not moving him to the third line. He's too important to the team to move him to the third line. Unless you want to go like total super crazy Pittsburgh Penguins when they won the cup and they had three really good lines with stars on the third line. Maybe, but I don't think they're at that point yet, because if you're moving him to the third line, you're looking at like a Nyes, Matthews, Yarncroke situation, and then you're probably putting Robertson with Domi and Marner. Now, 5 years ago, if you had guys like Robertson, Domi, and Marner, that would have been kind of fun. I would actually like to see that that line. But now it's kind of like, okay, are we really going to put our $11 million player on the third line?
If it sparks a guy,
yeah, I guess for a short term. Yeah.
It's not, yeah. But that's what I'm trying to tell people. It's not a permanent thing that these lines are being switched around. It's just a thing to kind of jumpstart two guys that really look like they're going through the motions right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I get that. And, you know, it's funny, actually, I saw your video about this topic, which was followed by a Stitch video by our good friend True Believer. I actually just saw it today because I opened up TikTok. As many people who are watching this might know, I kind of taken a hiatus on TikTok, but I checked in today. I was just checking on some of my friends and liking their videos and stuff. And I saw True Believers. And, you know, he was saying how these guys have ADHD because sometimes they just seem like they get bored with status quo. And that actually made me laugh so much, but it's probably actually kind of true. Like if we think about it, and maybe just a change of scenery, like you said, for like a game or like two games or a period.
Well,
might
what's
be
the
just...
big thing we say about players, Clark, that when they're not doing well on a team, just overall, they're not doing, what do we always say? Oh, you know, a change of scenery would really benefit this guy. Maybe going to a quieter market, or maybe going to a louder market, or maybe going to a team that has a little less media coverage here, or gets to play with this guy there because he knows him. You know, we talk about changes. What about in-house change of scenery, just to kick you in the ass a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, that's one thing, though, that we have to remember, like, and here comes the conversation about Sheldon Keefe again. We've had this conversation a couple times. But this is one of those things where Sheldon Keefe has been very hesitant in the past to do anything to rock the boat with Matthews and Marner, because he criticized them in the media more than once in the past, and more than once he has come out like the next day and said, you know, I didn't mean to say that, or I apologize for saying, or whatever he ended up doing. But he always walked it back, and this is a big thing that Steve Dangle has talked about a lot as well on the podcast, on their podcast. But he's almost seems like he's a little bit too afraid to like push their buttons too much, and I don't know what the behind the scenes chemistry and relationships are with players and coaches and stuff, but to me that kind of screams a small amount of dysfunction, especially if your head coach is afraid to move a guy down a couple lines for a little while or criticize him in the media. So there might be something deeper there that we don't even, you and I will never know, because it's never going to come out and nobody will ever talk about it because that's how it goes. But there might be a book about it like 20 years from now. But until then, we're kind of in the dark. And I just wonder if there's a little bit of that at play where that reluctance to do anything to push their buttons is keeping them on the line, on the same line, even if it's not working necessarily. Now, in saying that, James, before we move topics, and I'll be quick. Remember when they put Nyes on that line and they scored like first shift that game, and they've looked dominant at times.
Yep.
So I'm wondering, you know, we've talked about this in the past as well with Austin Matthews. Is he playing through an injury? Is Mitch maybe playing through an injury? That's something we don't talk about with Mitch because he plays so much every game. But maybe he's got something going on that's just slowing him down a little bit and that we don't know about because he's playing through it or something.
Well, if you do, then do the right thing and sit your ass down for a little bit.
I know.
Yeah. Don't play through it, because that obviously we all seen still a good season by Austin Matthews last year, but not an Austin Matthews type season. So Mitch Marner, I mean, come on. Still, what, 21 points in 19 games so far? He's picking up points and stuff like that, but it's just, he doesn't look like he has the same, if I'm going to say it like this, twitch reflexes he usually does, where he's like just a skitterbug, you know, with the zoomies. He just it doesn't seem like that speed and explosiveness that he has is there, that he usually, if you know what I mean. Like even if you watched him last night.
The quickness, because he's not the fastest player, but he can usually get around a guy or be quicker than other guys. And they're just, like you said, there kind of just seems to be this lack of almost like a reflex almost that we're missing or something. I'm not sure. But it's not a major thing. Like, I don't think he's playing with a damaged ligament, but there's something going on. And now one other thing too, that Kelly Rudy actually pointed out on Saturday night, was that he looks like he's being a little bit harder on himself than he normally is. And my first instinct was, Kelly, have you watched a Mitch Marner game in his entire career? Cause he's always pouting. He's always slamming his stick if he messes up or misses a pass or whatever. But maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's just something going on, and you know, we're all human, and again, that probably won't come out, but you know, maybe the human element is at play a little bit as well here.
No, I fully agree. And I mean, there's lots of different things, you know, some guys joking the wedding ring is slowing him down and things like that. You know, obviously got married this off season. So there's all kinds of little jibs and jabs that are going on. But listen, I will tell you this right now, Mitch Marner probably is dealing with a little something. And if it's minor, sit down for a week or two, let it come back, heal up, get going, and get rolling. That's all you need to do. But I know he's important to the squad, so they probably won't want him to do that. But we shall see. So not a great week for the Maple Leafs, but coming up this week, a little bit tough. You got an Atlantic team on Tuesday night, one on Saturday night, then squeezed in the middle. You got the shirt you're wearing, the Kraken. So
hey, yeah.
So the Panthers, the Kraken, and the Bruins this week. Saturday night's going to be a banging game. Hope I get back from the cheer comp in time to be able to be live and hang out for that one. It'll be fun. But I'm thinking this week we're getting a little bit of I'm saying 2-0-1. Leafs will get points in all three of their games. I think the Panthers, it'll be a battle back and forth, but the Leafs will take that one against Seattle. They seem to be a little bit undermanned, kind of down this year, not what they were last year. So I could say that Toronto takes that game. Sorry, Kraken Pod. I know you're listening. And
sorry, Kraken Pod.
Yeah, the Kraken Pod. And then we got the Bruins, and I do think the Bruins will play us tough. They're a tough out. I think we take them to overtime again and ultimately end up losing either in OT or the shootout. So I'm calling 2-0-1, points in all three.
Yeah, see, I've done this before where I've gone, I think they're going to win all the games. They're going to go undefeated this week, 3-0. But I'm going to say the opposite. I'm going to say they lose every game. Now, hear me out when I say this, because they're coming off two probably of their not proudest games of the season. And there's kind of a lot of turmoil going on around the team right now, if you notice. Like, the fan base is kind of getting a little cranky. The media is starting to lose that, like, that honeymoon phase of the start of the season. They're starting to get a little bit crankier in the media. You start to see all this stuff. And I'm wondering if this week is just kind of like that rock bottom week where they maybe end up losing a couple of games, which is going to force Brad Tree Living to do something. Now, we heard some stuff about John Klingberg. I don't think that's on the list, so I'm going to mention it now. We heard some stuff about John Klingberg. They're not sure about his timeline in terms of whether he's going to be back or not. Now, we can say that, but you remember what they did last year with Jake Muzzin? They hummed and hawed and hummed and hawed and hummed and hawed until like the very last moment when they finally did the thing, and then they made all the moves at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and I really think that was more predicated on Muzzin, to be honest with you.
Right.
You know, with him probably wanting to play and wanting that second opinion and wanting to have the window still open and not wanting to close the door. Yep. With John Klingberg, it sounds like the door is pretty much closed. They went to Sweden, where he is from, and he couldn't even get into a game. They couldn't even get him healthy enough to just be a token piece on the bench for the Sunday game against Minnesota. That tells me a lot about how good this guy is.
I agree. And it's just a matter of time now until something comes out. But it does sound like this week they're going to make that decision. So my thoughts are, you know, Florida's a tough match, and they got some of their guys back. They got Montour back not too long ago, and they got Ekblad. I think Ekblad's played like four games.
Barkov's back too.
Barkov's back. I think Bennett was maybe going to be back if he isn't already. I can't remember his timeline.
So put that Lorax in a box.
Honestly. Well, you know what? Get Ryan Reeves in the lineup then on Tuesday and see what happens. I'd love to see it. maybe that happens. But, you know, Florida's that team that they're still – remember in the game against Florida early in the year, and we're all like, oh, they're going to want revenge. And they just like came out and it looked terrible. Like, they looked flat. They looked –
yeah.
They didn't even remember they lost in the playoffs last year to these guys. So I'm going to have to see about that one. Seattle, you never know. They have that ability to be that team where I've said this about the Devils and the Panthers actually years ago, like in the early 2010s. They have a team full of second liners, And when that happens, maybe you don't have like that dominant star line, but you have a lot of good depth and you can, anybody can kind of take over any game. So Seattle might be an interesting game. And then Boston, I mean, it is Boston on a Saturday night. So who knows? But that one, like you said, is going to be a great one to watch. And I hope it's a great one to watch, because I was kind of hoping these last two were going to be nice ones to watch, and they really kind of weren't. I mean, I didn't mind the Pittsburgh game, but the Chicago game was just like, what's going on? Like, did they not just have like a full week off? Like, that's the way I kept thinking about it the whole time I was watching that Chicago game. It was just like, what team is this? Like, this doesn't look like the Leafs.
Well, here's the fun thing too. After the Bruins game, the Leafs have 5 days off again.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. We're going to have to see. I hope they leave it all out on the ice on Saturday, because like you said, they have a lot of time in between. So, but yeah, I'm going to just go for it. I'm going to go for it and say, 0-3. I'm going to say 0-3 this week, and it's going to cause a chain reaction of events. That's what I'm going for. That's the theme of this.
By the end of this week coming up, they'll be 0-3, have Chris Tanev on the blue line, a new goaltender, and they'll have traded John Tavares because our buddy Andy wants it to happen. So we'll see what happens. But that is the week that will be for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The good, the bad, the ugly this week. For me, I look at the good and I say, hey, it's good to see Max Domi, Cale Yarncroke, and Nick Robertson still rolling. It wasn't just a flash in a pan. It wasn't lightning in a bottle for a few games. That line actually looks like it has a little bit of mojo, some legs, to be some depth scoring for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they're not exactly inept defensively either. All players getting back in the plays. All players being able to break up plays. Cale Yarncroke, we know his defensive chops. Mr. Domi hasn't scored a goal other than the shootout one, but he's racking up the assists. And Nick Robertson still putting the puck in the net. And by the way, his release lately too.
Ooh.
Absolutely. If that thing starts getting on net, hello, we got something cooking here. But yeah, the good for me is that we have a third line that actually plays. And Domi has looked like he also has carved himself out a spot in this lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that answer for a third line. That's the good. I really like how they've been playing. And my buddy Dylan, not Fournier, I say this almost every week. We talk a lot. I got two Dylans in my Leafs world.
Two Dillies.
But he was saying a few weeks ago when Robertson got called up, man, that guy just doesn't know how to slow down. He's 110% full speed every situation. And I've noticed, I think in the last couple of weeks, I've noticed him kind of slow his game down a little bit. And maybe that's the nerves are gone, or he's just getting used to the speed a little bit more of the, you don't have to go all out, full out every single situation.
Well, also the comfort,
but I think he's looking more comfortable. Yeah. And I think not only that, but a spot where his skill set fits. Yeah. I think is also important, where he's not trying to be a checking winger. He's on a line that can be a scoring line. So I think that's a huge part of his development as a player, is just that comfort factor, and that he's slowing his game down a little bit. Cause before he was just like a rocket out there every single time, and which is great. It has its moments, but here and there. My good this week, I'm going to say the penalty kill. I've noticed the penalty kill has started to step up a little bit. They're bottom third in the league. I think they're like 24th or something overall. But I think in the last little bit,
31 to 24, that's an improvement.
Oh, they've moved up then. So then, yeah, I'm going to say the penalty kill for sure. I think that, you know, I've noticed it a lot in the last couple of games that they're blocking a lot more shots out there. They're clearing the puck out against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh could barely get the puck in the zone. Even they were doing such a great job blocking their entries. So I'm going to say the penalty kill deserves a little bit of a shout out, because they haven't for a while. So I'm going to say they do this time. They're the good.
All right. No, that's not a bad one at all. I've noticed the penalty kill as well. I've been harping on it all season so far. Yeah. And you know that I've been bringing up the fact that they need to turn it around and figure it out. Team like this with aspirations to go far really needs to have both a top 10 power play and a penalty kill. They got a long way to get to top 10, but hey, if you can get out of the basement and start working your way to respectability, it's all right. For me, I look at the bad for this week for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it's just going to be simple. It's simple little plays that are burning your ass, and that is little passes or not getting it out or just miscues that are leading to pucks going into the back of your net. That is something you can so easily clean up. So easily clean up, and it's just taking an extra second or making the right read of the right play or realizing, shit, buddy's closing in on me a lot faster than I thought he was. Let's not pass the puck to Matthews who give Dickinson a hat trick. Let's not do those little things. And it's not just those two players either with Brody and McCabe. There's lots of little plays throughout the game, whether it's Matthews dropping the puck to Marner on his blue line and Buddy scooting in between the two of them and taking that puck and going for a dance. Those things happen far too often. So it's the little plays they need to tune up for me.
Yeah, that's probably a really good one. I'm going to say the goaltending is on the little bit of the bad side recently. I'm not going to put them all the way to – I'm not going to put that as ugly myself, but I'm going to say that it's just been – I'm actually going to say Samsonov's actually been playing a little bit better recently than he had early in the season. I think he's maybe finding it a little bit. But there's been a couple of goals recently, especially, you know, the ones that Sammy let in against Chicago. There was a couple that just – I feel like he's got to have some of those. And like the – I think it was Dickinson's first or second one where he kind of had a shot from the top of the slot, and it's like there wasn't a whole lot of traffic, and he just beat him. And it's like, you know what, that's going to happen, but, man, it's been happening more than we want this year. And so I feel like the goaltending – I'm not going to put them all the way to ugly, but I'm going to say I'm not even going to say it's my full bad. I'm going to say it's like slightly bad. That's my slightly bad this week is just the goaltending. Yeah. I think there's some room for improvement, but at the end of the day, they also need to just figure out a few other things in front of them. So I'm not going to put them all the way to bad, but close.
Yeah, well, for me, there's not really huge ugly here. If I have to go ugly with something, I'm going to go ugly with Sheldon Keefe and the not wanting – to break players up or to sit players who are fighting the game. You know, you can sit Mitch Marner. It's not going to be the end of the world. Will he like it? No. But can that have a ripple effect throughout your lineup? Yes. Throw a Robertson up there. Throw a Domi up there. Throw someone up there who is having some spark. Noah Gregor, come on down, who's been absolutely, as advertised, kick-ass. Yep. Underrated signing this year. We talked about David Camp a couple years ago. This guy, Noah Gregor, is really bringing it. I mean, just pop him up there and let him have a shift or two and sit a guy who's fighting it. But Sheldon Keefe just isn't doing those things. And I really look at Guy Boucher, and I think he would be a guy that would do that and wouldn't have an issue, you know, really pushing those buttons to make things go the way that he wants them to. So for me, the ugly right now is maybe Keefe's inability to strike an iron on these guys when it's hot. You know, to bring a Noah Gregor up and maybe sit Marner for a shift or Nyes or whoever you feel is it. But also, Cal Yarncroke has become his Kerfoot. He puts Cal Yarncroke every single line, every single place. And I love Cal Yarncroke more than I've ever loved Kerfoot. But it's just like when there becomes a situation where he wants to put a guy somewhere, it's Cal Yarncroke. Every time it's Cal Yarncroke. Fourth line, third line, second line, first line, doesn't matter. Nyes, sit. Cal Yarncroke, you're going. So, yeah, no, Keefe's inability to just fully shake it up and not just yarn croak it.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm going to go with – oh, man, I'm going to go with their ability to not show up on Friday. Mm-hmm. They had a whole week off, and I know there was a ton of travel involved. I get that. But I feel like the way that the Leafs are operated, they're a first-class organization. If you watch any of the – behind-the-scenes documentaries that they have. They put out their own. It's called The Blueprint. It's really good. And they put one out early in the season. I think they usually put like 10 games in an episode or something and then release them, or like 15 games in an episode. So they've already had one this year. They talked about all the travel that they do. They talked about how the crew that they have on staff that prepares them for travel, all their doctors, all their behind-the-scenes sports physiotherapists and nutritionists and all these people are giving them every opportunity to succeed. So what happened on coming home from Sweden after, what was it? It was Sunday's game, right? Sunday, or was it Saturday? They had an entire week.
Yep.
I don't know how long the flight was, but I'm sure that they had at least 3 or 4 days at home.
They had 2 full days off when they got back. The Maple Leafs coaching staff talked to Guy Boucher when they had the Ottawa Senators over in Sweden. And he said the team took at least 2 days to find their legs. So they decide to give every single player 2 days fully off with no skating, no nothing, just to get home, get climatized, and then they brought them in on the third day to get back onto the ice, which, hell, is a smart thing to do, but it didn't.
It probably is. But it just, this isn't the first time this has happened, James. We talk about this for the last few years of them not being able to show up for certain games. And I'm sure that that's a conversation across the league. There's a lot of games. Not every game is going to be a Picasso. So I get that. But this team has all of the resources and tools, and they're coming a week where they had essentially four off days. And they looked tired and sluggish. And to me, that's just unacceptable at this point for this organization to be at that, to be struggling with that. This is an organization that shouldn't have that struggle. And they do more often than not, and or not more often than not, I shouldn't say that, but more often than I think all of us as fans are super happy with. So that's one thing I'm going to say is the ugly is just, you know, that game on Friday was really disappointing to me to lose to a team like Chicago, especially the way that they did. Now that's twice they've lost to Chicago this year. This is one of the worst teams in the league, and they had a full week to prepare for it, and they flopped. I'm going to say they flopped, yeah. Even though it was an overtime game. I'm going to say they flopped. So it's just something that I continue to struggle to understand how this organization doesn't have the tools and resources aren't using their tools and resources to put these players in a better situation. It just seems like there's some disconnect there. And it's something that we've talked about enough that I feel like at this point now it's a problem.
Maybe they put them in too good of a situation.
Too good. Yes. They're
maybe
too pampered.
The issue
could be
everything they want.
Could be. But to me, like the way that it's always talked about is, they have all these people planning all this stuff out in order to optimize everything. Yep. So why isn't that showing up on the ice more often is what I'm asking. And
maybe
this
it's too planned out. Maybe you need to let things fall in.
That could legitimately be a thing. And I'd be curious to know, you know, if somebody were to go in and do like an audit on it and they're like a psychological audit and be like, hey, this is actually what's going on. Maybe you're doing too much here.
Let me tell you this. I'll tell you a very personal, easy story here. So we went to Florida, the boys, a few years ago. It was just a trip where things were not rigorously planned. It was fly by the seat of your pants. Hey, we drove by a car museum. Let's stop in. Hey, we'll go down to the Everglades, go on a fan boat and check out gators. Hey, let's drive around the ditches and find gators all day long. Hey, let's go to a Tampa Bay Lightning game. Hey, let's go deep sea fishing on a catamaran way out in the ocean. None of it was rigorously planned, and it was a great trip. But then you go on those trips where every detail is planned out and you're stressed because you got to move from event to event to event to event. And it doesn't feel like a vacation because you're not free flowing and moving. Maybe if everything is so rigorously planned out and meticulously thought of that it's, hey guys, we're going from this to this to this to this to this, that it just becomes a robotic, monotonous thing that you're just like, all right, well, we're going through 12:30, we have lunch, 1 o'clock, we have our meeting, 1:30, we got to make sure we're getting dressed, 2 o'clock, we're on the ice, 2:45, we're off. You know, if it's so rigorously, like, I know you have to have times for things, but maybe shake it up a little bit. Maybe just let things kind of flow a couple days of the week and how things go. Who knows? But it just seems
might be
like
something to that. Might be something to that.
I don't know. We'll see. But anyways, ladies and gentlemen, that's the good, the bad, the ugly. Let's move on to some fun little topics here as we shoot through them. One thing that is coming on the horizon, I believe he's 3 points away, is John Tavares, 1,000 career points. Everyone is hoping that he holds off until the Boston game to do it. How fun would it be for him to help the Maple Leafs beat the Bees and get the 1,000 point plateau at the same time? Hey, Johnny T, I know a lot of people dunk on you, but for me, you're a guy who comes in every season. You're a point per game player. You show up every single night. If you're not scoring, you're doing the right things defensively. You block shots. You do things along the wall. You do all the right things that we want to see out of a player. Some people get upset because you make $11 million. Show me players that are consistently hitting the point per game mark or very close to every single season. By the way, without missing large chunks of games as well. He's never, you know, he's not missing for 20 or 30 games a season. He's in there. So for me, JT, 1,000 points, $11 million player, point per game guy, man. You don't find many of those in the NHL. So all this notion that he's slowed down and he's just a shell of himself, you know, I would love to have, you know, four lines of guys that were point per game players, shells of themselves, I guess, because the Leafs would be pretty fucking damn good if you ask me. Yeah, 1,000 points for JT though. Tip of the cap to him. Hope you do it against the Bruins, my boy.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the numbers. You know how hard it is to find NHL stats. Because one of the things that always surprises me about John Tavares is how much you said the word hits in your monologue there. How much he hits. He's one of the leaders on the team in hits. He has been. If you go look, not like top three, but like top five or six every year. The guy hits. And I love that about him. He's a puck battle winner. He's a guy who hits more than you'd think. He's extremely hard to get off the puck or get out from in front of the net. The guy is a brick house. And you know, he's whenever we talk about the Leafs having a bad game, there's not often that in those bad games, John Tavares had a bad game. He's usually the one that had the best game, usually out of anybody.
John Tavares last season, 112 hits.
112 hits. Like, that's a lot of hits.
90 the season before and already at 21 this season.
21 this year, so he's got a hit per game, which sounds low when you really think about how hockey is played. I always think about that. It's like, you know, you think about hockey, you're always bumping into guys, and the fact that a hit per game is considered a high number, it just sounds weird. You think you'd probably just like fall into three or four hits a game, but you don't. It's not how it works. So anyways, I love the guy. I think he's done a lot for this team. I think he's underrated almost at this point, is the way that, like you said, how people talk about him and his contract. Andy's probably just grinning over it right now because he wants him dealt. But I think the guy does a lot, and he's a really good captain. And I think when we all look back at his tenure with the Leafs down the road, like years from now, we're going to have a lot of great things to say about the guy. And I think he's going to be one of those guys who's an ambassador for the Toronto Maple Leafs for years and years after he's done playing.
Oh, we definitely will, especially when he hands the cup to McDavid in a couple of years. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. So the other thing that came out last week, we'll move away from the Leafs here. Lots of NHL juicy bits to talk about right quick. They announced something called the World Cup of Hockey in 2025. And I say as if. Bullshit. Last time I checked, the world was a lot bigger than four countries. And you're going to leave out some of your marquee names. Pasternak, Dreisaitl, just to name a couple. Because you're only going with Sweden, Finland, Canada, and the U.S. That's not the World Cup of Hockey, Gary. That's like your parents saying, hey, we're going to get you a puppy. And they get you one of those robot dogs from Toys R Us and say, here's your puppy. You know, it's like, hey, we told you we're getting a World Cup of Hockey, but we didn't tell you what kind of World Cup of Hockey you were getting. Now, here you go. We've given you what you wanted and you're not happy. It's exactly what Gary Bettman will say. And
oh,
Gary,
yeah.
I say, nay, nay.
That's exactly what he's going to do. It's so funny you mentioned that. That's like such a... We gave you the World Cup, and you're still complaining. There is no pleasing you fan base. Like, this fan base, there's no pleasing them. No, Gary, give us a freaking... Like, well, what... 2016, to me, I look back to when I was working with the Regina Pats. We moved offices, and when I got my new office... I got a TV behind me, and so it was behind me, so I couldn't even watch it. But what I did was, I put on the playlist of the 2016 World Cup, and I just had those games on repeat all day long. And it was so fun to just hear the under 23 team, and it was Matthews and Marner and McDavid and
McKinnon,
McKinnon, and I think John Gibson was the goalie that
Morgan
year.
Riley was like, there.
Morgan Riley, sure, and like McAvoy maybe at that point. I can't remember exactly who all was on that team, but it was just so fun. And then you got Team Europe with all these guys mixing and matching, and that was more fun than I thought it was going to be. And you got all the countries that you want to see in a big tournament like that. Mm-hmm. So there was that kind of gimmicky element of those two kind of thrown together teams mixed with, was it six countries at the time?
Yep.
Because I think it was the four that we just talked about, and then Russia and then Czech Republic, I think, had teams.
I think they were there. Yes, they were.
And then Team Europe was everybody else from Europe, and then under 23s. And I remember at the time, everyone was like, well, this is a joke. You have two made up teams and only six other countries. How it, you know, even that at the time we weren't super happy with, but it was so fun. That whole tournament was so fun. And that was eight teams. To cut it in half, it's just like, what's the point? Will I watch? Yeah, probably. I'll probably watch. But the fact that it's going to be like, basically, like, I think the format I saw was Canada plays the U.S. a couple times. in a small series, and then the winners play each other somewhere with Sweden and Finland. The winners of that one play the winners. It's like, that's not even a tournament.
What I don't understand too is the other thing is they want to do is they want to put Sweden and Finland over in Sweden and Finland over there to play. So you're going to ship all those NHL players over there to play in a different time zone just because you want to, again, grow the game. By the way, it'll probably be blacked out in Canada.
Probably.
And then have Canada and U.S. play in neutral sites in Canada and U.S., which is understandable. That works. But for me, you're sending all those players, and then you're going to bring them all back when those games are done to play Canada, the U.S. in North America. So it doesn't make any sense to me. Gary, just do it right. Stop being a little bitch. Get everybody together. And I'm pissed off about this because I think it's ridiculous. It's get everyone together. Go talk to the other leagues. Get all the players for the other teams, whether it's, you know, go to get the checks. I know the Russia situation can't happen, but go get Denmark. Go get everybody else. Get all the league. Make it something.
Yeah, do it. Do a big thing. But
if you're not giving us the damn Olympics, make this the NHL's version of the Olympics and make it big. Go friggin' large and make the Olympics look small on a scale where fans are like, I would rather the World Cup than the Olympics.
And that's... It's funny you say that because in soccer, that is the World Cup is that way in soccer, in footy, for Andy, who's watching a little football. But that is the way the World Cup is. I mean, the Olympics are a big deal in soccer, but the World Cup is the thing that everybody talks about and looks forward to and does parties for. And
it's like so that, huge.
It's huge. And the fact that the problem I will say is that this is an NHL event. It's not like the IIHF runs it, which is what soccer has. FIFA, they don't have a IIHF run event. It has to be NHL. So the problem with going out to Denmark and getting Denmark to play is that a lot of those players are on European teams. There's contracts involved over there. There's insurance. There's all these other things that the NHL, frankly, just doesn't want to deal with because that's how they operate as a league.
As partner soon as there's, up with the IIHF and figure
they
it
won't
out,
though because if they partner with the IIHF, they'd be at the Olympics. That's where we're at this point.
But that's so ridiculous. It's so childish. I don't want to give you my toys to play with because I'm worried that something will happen to them, and I don't want to insure your toys because something probably will happen to them.
I get that that's the problem, but my point is that if they would have partnered with the IIHF, we'd have the Olympics, and they don't want, as soon as there's any level of difficulty involved in something, they don't do it. That's what the NHL has been doing for years. That's what they're doing this year with
it's not a World Cup.
That's why you can't wear stuff in warmups anymore. They don't have pride nights anymore. That's because there's difficulty, and the NHL just said, "Nope, never mind." We're
Marc Andre Fleury, you kick ass, by the way, my buddy. Keep going.
Absolutely, good job on him. But it's just like it's to a point now with the NHL where it's just like, oh well, they're not going to do anything cool because they never do anything cool. They always don't. So they could absolutely have a 24 team tournament with all the countries that have a whiff of what hockey is. And just bring them all together and do something cool that everybody talk about growing the
what
game.
What was that word you used there?
Cool.
Is that cool you said? NHL and cool don't go hand in hand.
But can you imagine? I know. But can you imagine? Can you imagine? Now, I know everybody always harps on, you know, when Canada plays Kazakhstan and it's 32-0. I understand that there's a problem there. But I think personally that if you could bring together, six pool, four teams in a pool, and have Canada, U.S., Finland, Sweden, Czech Republic, and if Russia's not going to be involved, I don't know, let's say like Germany or somebody like that. And
Denmark, they're the Norway.
Yeah, sure. And then you fill out all the pools with all those other countries, and you just have a World Cup. Like, that's the way to grow the game. Swiss, exactly. There's enough competent countries now in hockey that you can do that. And yes, there's probably going to be some 12-0 games, but there are also blowouts in the FIFA World Cup. Like, there's blowouts in that
there's
too.
Also like, Cinderella shocker stories.
Exactly. And you get those every year. Like the 1 year Latvia was super good in the World Juniors out of nowhere. And like stuff like that happens. And you know, it's never going to happen if you have Sweden playing three games against Finland and Canada playing three games against the US and then the winners play one game.
That is groundbreaking. It grows the game. That moves my needle. Anyways, the World Cup, as if it stays the way it is, to me, it's BS. For me, I'm going to say this one. This one's a quick one. Just a happy birthday to the NHL. 106 years ago today, at a Windsor Hotel in Montreal, the NHL was formed. There were five teams. Clark, do you know what those five teams are?
Oh, my gosh. The original five teams? Is that what you're saying? Sorry, my kids were talking.
Five teams, yeah.
My kids were talking behind me there, and I zoned out there for a sec. Okay, was it the Ottawa Senators?
Ottawa's a team?
Ottawa's a team. It's not the Senators, though. No. Toronto has to have been a team.
Toronto?
New York has to have been a team. No? Montreal. Montreal. But yep. There was, like, the Montreal, like, Maroons or something like that. I'm going to say, like, was there any American teams originally?
There was not.
No, it was all Canadian teams. Was it like Peterborough or something like that?
I will give you these teams. It was Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, yeah. Montreal again, and Quebec City.
Okay.
Were the five teams 106 years ago. Made it so we could sit here today and talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs all this time later. Something else everybody else is talking about is the Trouba slash. I'm just going to say the NHL is a goddamn joke. $5,000 fine for that. Come on, set a precedence here. Because there's so many different plays like this that have happened. I look at Matthews on Dahlin, got two games. I've seen other guys get longer. I've seen other guys get a bigger fine. I've seen other guys get a, you know, one-game suspension. But it's Trouba as well. He's a physical player. I wouldn't say he's dirty, but this play was dirty. You have to be in control of your stick. A swinging motion like that. I mean, come on. Marty McSorley got arrested for doing a similar thing to Donald Brashear. So
yeah.
I'm just saying, man, $5,000 is a slap on the wrist for a guy who makes over $8 million a year. Just my two cents.
Yeah, we made a joke earlier that if he was a Maple Leaf, he would have been out for 50 games. But it is, you know, it wasn't necessarily like the worst play we've seen, but it definitely is something. And I think Jacob Trouba maybe gets a little bit of a spotlight on him because of how hard he hits. I will say, I think it was in the same game. Because who was it? Who were they playing when he got the slash?
I think it was
Philly.
I think it was Washington, but it wasn't.
Was it Philly? Because I remember there was a play recently where I think it was Nick Delorier was trying to fight him. And he was following him from like the top of the circles through the neutral zone. And Trouba was like,
flattened, buddy.
Trouba was like, listen, I'm not trading myself for you. You're purposely trying to get me in the penalty box here. And you could tell that that was his attitude. He's like, get off me, fly. Like, you black fly. Like, get off me. And then the guy gets the puck, comes towards him, and Trouba just flattens him. And then Delorier is like, okay, we got to fight now. And Trouba's like, no, we don't. I'm making a play. I'm playing the game. You're not. So I just thought that was funny. I got to give a lot of kudos to Jacob Trouba because I think 99% of teams in the league, which is essentially all of them, would like a guy like Jacob Trouba on their roster. He's an old school throwback. He's probably one of the last true big hitters in the league. And you know, if we could take him on the Leafs right now, if you could give me a swap for TJ Brody and him, I'd probably take it in a heartbeat. So no offense to TJ Brody, but you got to move money out. Now we're getting into a whole money out
thing.
Yeah.
We won't go down that road. We've talked to TJ.
No, Brody, but I'm just saying, if you could plop Jacob Trouba with Morgan Riley, I think you'd have a really, really good top pair is all I'll say. Because he's truly one of the last of his kind.
Well, before we get into our last couple of topics, something that I will say is our friends over at the Hockey Podcast Network, they partnered up with our buddies over at DraftKings. And if you use the promo code THPN, you're in on the action. But bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now. Use the code THPN. New customers can get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting $5 on hockey. That's code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook. An official sports betting partner of the NHL, the crown is yours. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for your problem gambling. Call 888-789-777 or visit ccp.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issue and see dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2023, all rights reserved. So go check out DraftKings. Get the THPN. Let's get it done. We're going to move on to Perry and the Hawks. This, to me, is just a situation that did not need to be a situation. The Hawks could have very easily came out and just said, Corey Perry is taking a leave of absence from the team. At this time, him and his family would like privacy. We will be fielding no comments. That would have been the easy way to do this.
Yeah, but we wouldn't be talking about it.
The Hawks are the Hawks, and they basically made it, this is an organizational decision, and we're not speaking any more on it. We don't have any more on it. Nobody can get any information on it. It keeps going that way. They keep saying it's an organizational thing. They ask if it could be trade-related. They say nothing's off the table. Absolutely weird. And then Corey Perry and his agent come out and say, hey, by the way, I'm stepping away from the team to take some time for my family in a personal matter. We respect privacy at this time. Wow. Did they just teach the Hawks what to say? Like, why couldn't you have just done that instead of making it what it is now, which is a damn media circus from people saying, did Corey Perry die? Has Corey Perry done something illegal? Is Corey Perry in legal trouble? Is there something going on, like Milan Lucic situation? For me, you left a wide open door. And I'll say this. I don't like Corey Perry as a player. You'd love him on your team, but he's a worm. But everybody at the end of it, there's the human aspect. And the human aspect is this man has a family. He has children. He has friends, colleagues, peers, whatever else goes on in his life that he has attached to him. And you left the door open for speculation, which the internet does a damn good job of doing. And they've speculated everything under the sun for this guy when you could have very easily nipped it in the butt, just said, hey, he didn't play in that game. It was a personal situation. We're allowing him to be with his family and take time. That's all we'll be saying about the matter at this time. When Corey Perry is ready to talk about it, he will then. That stops it right there. But you healthy scratch him from a game, kick him out of a practice, make it sound like you kicked him out of a practice, by the way, because you bag skated the hell out of Zaitsev and put him in that game, which they made a big deal about too. Well, we don't usually bag skate guys we're going to play, but our hand was forced. Why are you doing this? What are you trying to achieve here other than what you've achieved, which is just more chaos underneath the Chicago Blackhawk banner when you're trying to promote a new young phenom on your team in Connor Bedard, which should be the focus. But again, it is not. It is your mishandling of simple PR shit that you cannot do.
Yeah, that was the only thing I could think of the whole time you were talking was, I feel like there needs to be some changes to the marketing department, the public relations department, the media relations department with the Chicago Blackhawks.
But it had to come from above, though, Clark. It didn't. I don't even think it was them because it's the GM saying this and the coach.
Yeah, but I think the thing is that whenever there's an organizational thing such as Corey Perry situation happening, the PR staff's purpose is to go to the GM
and say
basically coach them what to say or type something for them, say you cool with this, take it back to the other PR people, say everybody else cool with this, this all makes sense, this covers all our bases, and then you send it out.
It's almost like they did this, they handed him the thing and he kept his hand over what they wrote below, but yeah. Right here it just said organizational decision, so that's all he read was organizational decision.
Yeah, I just don't quite get it. And like when you think organizational decision, then like you said, like the Milan Lucic thing kind of creeps into your head because of how fresh it is, like you said. And it seems like they're doing something to him. Whereas then Corey Perry comes out and says it's a personal thing. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that happens all the time. And the unfortunate part is that we just saw, I can't think of the player, but there was a player just in the last week, right before or around the same time the Lucic news came out,
Girardi,
that went into the substance abuse program. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he's the young player from the Colorado Avalanche. It's a
Girardi. Samuel Girard. Samuel Girard.
Samuel Girard. Yeah.
Yeah, he went into the, now it's not substance abuse, I shouldn't say that, the player assistance program, I think.
I know what you're talking about, for mental
and
health.
So, yeah, mental health, or sometimes it's alcoholism or drug use or whatever. It doesn't matter. They call it the player assistance program.
He came out and said that it was his mental health issues led him to drinking more, which has caused a bigger problem. So, it's, you know, they go hand in hand, and that's what he's getting help for.
So, for this whole thing to get flubbed as much as it is, and like you said, the, one of the first things you said was it leads to nothing but media speculation when you don't, when you have a very vague reasoning for it. And I think organizational decision is very vague. So it is just all of it, mess. And Chicago just proves again that something's a mess in that organization altogether, and they need to figure some stuff out. And, you know, on top of that, Taylor Hall's out for the year now for that team. Corey Perry's having issues. Like, they're, they are coming left and right for Chicago right now. So on the other flip side of it, I feel bad for a lot of people who work for that team because they are dealing with stuff all the time on that team.
There's no quit. It's just an avalanche, no pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so Chicago, clean yourself up, man. Just figure it out. Like, this is ridiculous. Clean house, like Clark said. Get somebody who can write better things. I mean,
and
there's
You know what else it could be? We've seen it more and more in workplaces nowadays. Is that sometimes there's, you're short staffed. Like, it's not necessarily about cleaning house. It's about having too many responsibilities for a small amount of people. And I don't know how Chicago is. I mean, they're a big market team, bigger market team. They've been a big budget team for most of my life. Even when they were bad, they were still usually a bit of a bigger budget team. So I don't know how their organization is operated, but there might be a situation where they're just short-staffed and they have so much going on with their team that they're just like, they don't have time to proofread something or like make sure they know what they're putting out. So I don't know. Something's going on, but that needs to be checked into.
Anyways, Chicago, just, it's just ridiculous in my eyes. Making a big story out of something that shouldn't be a big story. But speaking of big stories, this past weekend, obviously, if you are living under any sort of social media, even if you're not a wrestling fan, there was a couple of huge comebacks in the WWE, with Randy Orton being one of them, and then the surprise of CM Punk coming back to the WWE. And I think it's a fitting thing to end the show with Clark. I want to know, what is your hockey equivalent of a comeback that you were just marking out for? Like, oh my God, this guy is back. This is amazing. Whether it's a recovery from an injury, a guy coming back from whatever and showing up, what is your guy?
I think the biggest one, and it's so funny that this is happening right now because I just saw a picture of this guy. So when I think of CM Punk coming back, Randy Orton was recently in the WWE and then he was out for like, I think it was a year and a half, and now he's back. When CM Punk comes back, that's a guy who's been out of the WWE now for like, what, 8 years? Like that, not 10 years. So that's a big moment in time for somebody who publicly shamed the organization, left, did some things on his own, some big things on his own, was a big name elsewhere, and now he's back in the organization that he bashed and has openly bashed since as well. I've seen some stuff from him. I'm a fringe wrestling fan, but I even got excited when I saw the news that he came back.
I wasn't even a
wrestling fan necessarily when he was at his peak in the WWE. But I followed him a little bit since in the AEW because my buddy Jeremy Corrigan, shout out Jeremy, is a big AEW guy. So he's kind of kept me in line with what's going on over there. But for him to come back is huge. So I think of a guy who was kind of, you know, at the top of his game in the WWE, was one of the best. And he left mysteriously, you know, some stuff happened and he was out for a while and he was doing his own thing. And then comes back. And when I think of a hockey player equivalent, I think of a guy who was larger than life in the NHL. While he played, nobody could touch him. He physically imposing on everybody. He would literally ragdoll multiple guys at the same time. He had one of the biggest shots in the league. He could play both positions. He could play forward or defense. And he mysteriously disappeared. People thought he was maybe at the lake. Nobody quite knew. And I just saw a picture of him. He doesn't look like he can play still. But Dustin Byfuglien,
the big boy.
Oh, if you got Dustin Byfuglien in a warm-ups, just got him in the warm-ups, like on the ice for warm-ups, and you got him skating out maybe on his own to his own music or something, the entire league would stop and look and be like, what? Like, everyone would be like, if Kane returned to the WWE, for example, yeah, it'd be like, oh my God, like, we're screwed. Like, that would be what everybody would do if Dustin Byfuglien came back. So I think, again, he's probably not, it's not going to happen, but that would be the one where if it happened, I would be like, oh, I'm watching every, if it's the Jets, for example, I'm watching every Jets game to see what happens here, because that would be must watch for me.
Now, I have two. I have one where, you know, the comeback has already happened, and it was when Mario Lemieux beat cancer, came back against the Toronto Maple Leafs, fittingly enough, scored two goals in that game, and just blew the doors off. Nobody thought he was coming back. Everybody thought his career was over. Not only did he come back, he was Mario Lemieux. He still scored the goals. He still had the cadence. He still had everything. You know, it was – you talk about marking out in a pop. It's Mario Lemieux. I'm a Leaf fan, but I'm still like, oh my God, he's back. He's here. He's playing. He's scoring goals. This is awesome. The one for me that right now, if you can find a way to make this happen, I know he's old, guys. Don't rag on me for this. But how amazing would it be, just for warm-ups maybe, to have Ty Domi come out at the Scotiabank Arena. Again, just like you said about Byfuglien, some music. But him and Domi, they both come out. His son, they do the Bash Brothers or something, WWE style, and just hype the shit out of the crowd and just go nuts. Everybody would eat that up with a spoon. Even at the All-Star game, I think they could do it there where they bring him out and just do something fun like that. But a Domi pop there in Toronto would be bonkers, just bonkers.
Yeah, I think Darcy Tucker would probably be in a similar vein there too. If you got Darcy Tucker coming out, I haven't seen him in a while, but if you could get him to grow his hair out a little bit and just kind of get it wet and skate onto the ice and just kind of shake his head a little bit, just, I think that would
get the Bay Street Bullies together, man.
Yeah, they'd go nuts.
Corson, Robertson, Tucker, let's go.
Oh, let's do it. I'm in. Oh,
man. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the show for tonight. I know you've tuned in for an hour. I appreciate you the fullest. Make sure you match the subscribe. Go follow Clark Monroe over on Twitter. He's not on TikTok using it, but go follow him anyway.
TikTok. This is my name on TikTok now, though. Some people might know me as Producer Clark. I changed my name back to my own name. So Clark Monroe. So make sure you check it out.
There you go. Go check him out. Never know what might happen there. There may be a TikTok.
Oh, maybe I'm the WWE comeback on TikTok this year. Maybe that's me, and I'll pop up just randomly one night and to CM Punk's Cult of Personality song.
It's the Clark of Personality. It could happen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I do thank you very much for always tuning in. The support's been great. The show's been growing. Shout out to our friends over at the Hockey Podcast Network, and for everybody tuning in as well. But this right here is Offside Hockey Talk, where the Maple Leafs and hockey come to talk.